Hi, everyone, and welcome to the live Fundraising Success webinar, Winning the Digital Revolution, Tips for Balancing Direct Mail with Online, sponsored by CDS Global. I'm Margaret Battistelli-Gardner, Editor-in-Chief of Fundraising Success, and your host for today's event. Let's face it, fundraising is changing. Single-channel events are limited, but many nonprofits don't know how to meld online best practices with what they've been doing for decades. This session is designed to answer tough questions and outline the how-to of successful multi-channel integration. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Ask a Question box. You could also use the Ask a Question box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions at the end of the hour, and you can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets and bells and whistles on the console. And speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. Before we jump into the presentation, we'd like to ask you all to take a minute to respond to the poll questions you'll see in your console. There are three, and the results will appear after each one. First question, is a majority of your organization's campaign work done through direct mail or online channels? And it looks like we have 55% of our attendees are working in direct mail, and 38.3% are a combination of both, just 1.6 are online. Our next question, does your organization currently have a strategy in place for integrating online and offline fundraising? And we are pretty evenly divided with 50% yes and 46.5% no. And our final question, does your organization currently outsource part or all of your fundraising campaign work, donation processing, lockbox, caging, acknowledgments? And 60%, an overwhelming majority, handles all the campaign work in-house. Thank you so much for taking the time. I bet you didn't expect to see the results so quickly. But let me introduce our speakers. With us today to discuss ways to win the digital revolution are Brett Ridge, Senior Solutions Manager of Nonprofit Strategy for CDS, Angie Moore, Partner at Donor Voice, and Jan Schultz, Director of Donor Relations at Operation Smile. Brett, let's kick things off with you.
All right. Well, thanks. I appreciate everybody joining us today and helping us out with a little information up front there on the poll. That was kind of cool. What I'm going to do here is kind of set the stage for the rest of the presentation by talking a little bit about just where we are industry-wise, not only with donations overall, but how electronic donations are affecting things and how direct mail continues to actually be a real part of the fabric of what we do in the nonprofit world. So let's start off real quick taking a look. Right now, this year, the nonprofit industry in 2011 raised about $298 billion. That was up about 4% from the previous year in 2010. Now, that's actually nice to see growth, but at the same time, it's kind of slow growth. And when you go back and look, 2010 and 2011 actually showed recovery from the recession, and yet it's apparently, if you go back, it is the slowest recovery since 1970 and then the second slowest recovery on record. So it is nice and encouraging to see that we've got more money coming in and things are going in the right direction, but it is kind of slow right now as far as in comparison to past years. There are now a little over 1 million 501c3s that are actually out there registered with the United States government. They were about there was about 200,000 more that were registered at this time last year, but those organizations either had to file their taxes or go away. And a lot of organizations, particularly smaller ones that might have been created for oh, just a single event or a single person, they were not filing tax forms and they may not even exist anymore. So they actually were sort of allowed to expire, and we may see more of them come back, but it did shrink the pool at least for this first year since that happened. So about 200,000 organizations off of the books. And then one of the other interesting things we've gotten from our friends at Target Analytics is that for the fifth straight year, the number of donors that are actually out there in the market has gone down, and that is something that points you in a direction that obviously we need to do a great job of keeping track and cultivating the donors that we do have. We all know how difficult it is for us to find and acquire new donors, and it's going to be even more so if there are fewer of them out there. So very important that we are able to try to cultivate the donors that we do have. So taking a look at the electronic donations as they are right now, there's quite a bit of online success, and people would assume that at this point in time. It's about 16% of newly acquired donors that came in 2011, according to the 2011 State of the Industry Survey that Blackbaud does, and that's up about 7% over the last 5 years. So not too bad. You're seeing more and more online work. Social media, of course, is allowing an incredible vehicle for a lot more targeted, trustworthy communication, and really it's with the people that care most about your organization. So that's really helping things as well, and we see that over 89% of nonprofits right now are using Facebook in some fashion or another. And then, of course, you got the peer-to-peer tools that have become very, very popular. And there have been some surveys done to some of those people, I believe is the Peer-to-Peer Event Fundraising Consumers Survey. It's a bit of a mouthful, but 73% of event fundraisers report using online peer-to-peer tools, which means that they are getting access to them, and about half of those people actually have found that fundraising is much easier than they expected because of that. So those are all very positive things that are happening with online donations.
Brett, could I just break in for a minute?
Yes.
We had a question about what the hashtag for the webinar is, and it is #FSWebinar, just in case anyone wants to tweet. So I'm sorry. Go ahead. Continue.
Super. All right. Now, there is a lot of evidence that regular mail still works, and I think most of you, as we can see from that poll we took earlier, still understand that about 80% of funds are still received in response to direct mail. And we know that premiums work. There's a reason why organizations will send out the calendars and the stickers and all that. They actually do work. They actually do entice people to give. Now, some of those pieces, the premiums particularly, may not entice them to give at the levels of a straight ask or a straight donation request, but they do work. There's also a lot of evidence that a large percentage of online donations are coming in response to a mailed ask. People are very much more likely to come in online and make a donation if they've been sent a piece of mail. In fact, much more so than if they get it in an email form. They go back to the whole thing where they're getting something tangible. They know there was a cost associated with having something sent to them, and so they're reacting, and they still go online to make that donation, but it's coming from a mailed ask. Mailed respondents are 78% more likely to make a second gift online than those responding to an online solicitation. So, again, if they're getting it in the mail, they're 78% more likely to make a second gift than if they had received that in an online solicitation. And then they're much more likely to continue to give through the online channels as things go. The reverse itself is not true, and we have not seen that. So a lot of success there with direct mail leading to online success. Is online itself a failure in any way? Is a 7% increase really all that good? I think over the last couple of years, we might have expected that over a five-year period, we would have seen a lot more in the way of growing online percentages, and yet only 7%. Does that measure up to the amount of time and energy and the resources that's been put into the online platforms? And I think that the answer there is it is good, but at the same time, probably not what you might expect. And one of the reasons for that is where we're going to go with the rest of this presentation today, is that a lot of what's happening online is not fully integrated with what's happening offline. And when you start to put together a strategy that does both, that takes into account both, then you start to see some serious success. Right now, the majority of industry CEOs state that email is not an effective way for them to solicit, and that plays right into that 7% increase, that it maybe it's better if there were a combination track being taken. It's just not something that seems to work real well. And we also see that the peer-to-peer donor retention on those peer-to-peer programs, while they're very successful up front, you lose a good number of your fundraisers every year because different people cycle in from events, and you also lose a lot of your donors every year, and you're going back out and getting new donors, which is really cool, but at the same time not getting the same people to give. Now, that's not necessarily the same, of course, within every organization, but it definitely is what we've seen across the country from different organizations answering questions on that. Social media itself is really cool, and we talked about why it is, but it's really right now not a proven driver of online donations. It is a great reinforcement of brand. There are some issues as to why it's not a great driver of online donations. First of all, a lot of social media outlets can't accept or process gifts. Some can, but not all of them. And effective social media, of course, is more about conversations, more about storytelling, and really it's about inclusion rather than asking for something. It's about making people part of your group, making them feel part of your organization. So there are ways to use it to help you do fundraising, but it is not necessarily a huge driver of fundraising in and of itself. So real quickly, just consider a few of the barriers to online success right now, and some of the barriers actually also end up being some of the advantages as you move through it. And we're starting to see that, you know, it's always cost a lot to get this put together for an organization. You have time, energy, and resources. And yet as more is invested in it and as people put more into this as far as organizations are concerned, then you're having fewer and fewer issues with that. So right now it's a barrier. There's a lot that needs to go into putting together an online system, and yet at the same time, organizations are dealing with that, and so things are getting better. Same socioeconomically, you know, it really comes down to the fact that do people have access online to get to you to make a donation online? Well, it's becoming more and more commonplace that there are all these different ways that people can get to you. It's less and less of a burden. It might still be relatively expensive to have online access, but people at this point are starting to invest in that, individuals to make sure that they have that. And then age, of course, has always been something that has been a little bit sticky. Of course, for a long time, the older that you got into older age groups, the fewer people were going online and making donations. You know, you had younger groups that were doing a lot more with donating online. Now, what we're seeing is that's starting to shrink as well. Because, you know, as the baby boomers get into being into the upper brackets, they're a lot more comfortable with technology and a lot more comfortable with doing things online. So even those barriers there are starting to reduce. So the good news is, even though all those barriers are there, they are starting to get out of the way as things continue to evolve technology-wise across the country. The peer-to-peer retention. One of the things that's really interesting there is 80% of the people still actually ask personally and then direct people to a peer-to-peer portal via email or a phone call. So what we're getting there is that regardless of the fact that the funds are coming in online, it's in combination with a personal ask. And so what we see is it's really a personal form of fundraising that happens to utilize an online channel. And there again, it's always working well when you put it into a balanced program. Peer-to-peer is often considered a team sport. You get corporate groups and teams together to push each other, and that's one of the ways that it works really well again, and yet at the same time, there's a person-to-person, there's a team aspect to that that really shows that it's not just an online vehicle that's making that happen. It's a combination of online and person-to-person. Challenges with social media. Nonprofits are not always sure how to use social media. Some of them at this point in time, some of the larger ones, have finally started to study. When you look at Red Cross and the American Heart Association and the Cancer Society, starting to study the use of influencers, where they actually can go to the people on who are fans of their organization and go out there and actually find out who is influencing the most people and then get messages to them and have those sent out. But that's taking time and it's taking energy and resources. And it's difficult to consistently shepherd a program like that. There are some great ways to integrate these things, but it's taking nonprofits a while to do that. And, of course, integration of fundraising software with social media is often sketchy. Not everybody has that right now, nor can everybody afford to switch to a system that integrates easily with any kind of social media. So a couple of barriers there. So
Brett,
we go back.
Brett, this is Margaret. I'm sorry. We have a question that is fairly basic, and I don't want – we have actually two. I don't want our attendees to get lost here.
Okay.
But we've had a couple people ask you to explain a little bit about exactly what peer-to-peer fundraising is.
Okay. Well, so that's a great thing. The peer-to-peer tools would be the kind that generally you would use for event fundraising, or you could actually just do it as a regular campaign, but it's set up where there's a site out there. You usually pay for some software and a license fee from a company, and then all of your fundraisers essentially have their own little site that's out on the web, and they will go, and from there they will email friends and family. They will send out notes to friends and family and have them go to their site and make a donation there. And so this works very well for events, bike rides, walks. It can work for any number of pledge events. And you will watch a lot of this stuff happen online, and it makes it very easy on the person who is doing the asking, at least initially. So if I had if I were doing a walk, I would have a little page within the walk page, and it would be Brett Ridge's page. It would have maybe even a little thermometer there that showed how much I wanted to raise and how much I had raised at this point, and I would send out from there emails to people saying, hey, can you support me on this? Now, going back to that previous slide, what we're finding is that people do that, and it is very easy, and it gets the first word to a prospective donor from the fundraiser, but what they end up doing a lot of times is still making a personal phone call or a personal ask to get people to go back to that site and actually make the donation. Hopefully that clarifies kind of what we're talking about there.
Great. Thank you.
So reasons to ensure online presence. Last couple slides for me. Of course, you know, cost, speed, scope, security. You can do a lot of things very quickly. The online stuff typically costs you for larger amounts of people, larger reach, and costs you a little bit less. You have pretty good security these days. And actually what we find is that people that donate online, they actually do give larger gifts, which is kind of a nice thing. We also know that online recurring donors, which are the people that would be giving you sort of pledge installments, sort of a monthly or every 6 months or every year, they're more likely to sort of let that continue to go, and they give you a 600% to 800% higher lifetime value. So that's a great advantage as well. As far as taking a look at social media, your first further conversational communications are easier and more cost-effective as well. So a lot of great reasons to continue to push that. And then, you know, what it really comes down to is the online stuff is a part of a very, very balanced fundraising program. The idea here is to balance it with your offline stuff, and we're going to talk about how to do that now here in just a minute. You know, 80% of the associations that we see out there whose memberships increased last year, they did include some social media, but they were also doing the ask via direct mail. 92% of people trust recommendations of friends and family. So social media and storytelling, helping them decide what they should give to and who they should give to, but not necessarily the vehicle by which they give. And it kind of goes the same with even with recommendations of strangers online. 70% of people trust the recommendations of strangers. So when you take a look at fundraising and storytelling, it's still either way, even if you didn't have a vehicle to give directly off of social media or something like that, you're getting a reinforcement and you're getting balance. It also, of course, eliminates a little bit of boredom and redundancy. And the perceived ease of donation is a nice thing, along with the perceived strength of an organization. And really, this is the last point there, is that a lot of times you need to have really solid online portals, online tools for people to give, even if they're not being accessed all the time, because it gives a perceived notion that you are on the cutting edge, that you're keeping up with technology, that your organization is a solid one that has plans and is moving forward. If you're falling behind on your online presence, that really can be a problem, and people will notice that, and they'll start to be worried about whether or not they should be giving you their cash. Bottom line, though, the whole thing here is that it needs to be part of a balanced group a balanced grouping of fundraising tactics online and offline. And I think we're going to get into now some examples of some people who have done that and exactly how you can do that too. And I think that leads into Jan.
Yes, I'm sorry. Thanks, Brett. Jan, you're up next.
Wonderful. Thank you. So thanks, Brett, and it's a pleasure to be here today. And my thanks to you and Margaret and Angie for inviting me to join you and share some insights into how Operation Smile views integration and how we have implemented cross-channel campaigns by sharing several case studies with you this afternoon. So, as Brett mentioned, we are all familiar with the general definition of what integration is. It's that intentional coordination in timing and messaging in multiple media vehicles, response channels, or engagement devices to engage donors and certainly to raise income for your organizations. So, at Operation Smile, we take integration to the level of integrating across areas of functional specialties, from direct response to marketing and communications, online and donor services to our major gift team. We are under one umbrella, one fundraising team. So we all have the same goal, raising money to help more kids, and this is important to ensure consistency across our communication touch points with our donor. So at Operation Smile, we have seen that donors engaged through multiple communication channels have higher response rates, retention, and lifetime value, all things that Brett mentioned just a little bit earlier. When the same message is delivered across multiple channels, it increases the impact of that message. So as an organization, we identify our primary fundraising channels and then complement them with other media opportunities. We deliberately align our marketing efforts for maximum impact. So true integration is achieved through that synergy with our brand, our message, our offer, and our creative across multiple channels and audiences. And for Operation Smile, at the very heart of all of this is our donor, the heart of our donor. Donors are the lifeblood that make it possible every single day for Operation Smile to transform children's lives. And it's those hearts that we need to connect with. Our integration efforts will not be effective if we don't keep the heart of our donors at the center of our campaigns and our conversations. Applying our Operation Smile donor-first philosophy, even to the level of operational integration, ensures we are connecting with our donors through the right channels and offering them the easiest, most convenient methods for them to make a donation. So I'd like to start by sharing how we integrate across channels during an acquisition direct mail campaign, and that happens several times a year. So during our direct mail acquisition campaigns, we integrate with online to leverage the offer across channels. So this is our direct mail control package, and printed on the outer envelope and on the letter and the response device, we have a unique URL, a web address. This one is operationsmile.org/5timesgift. This unique address will direct the prospective donor to a donation landing page. For each version of a mail package and each test creative package, we will have unique URLs so we can track response back to each version. And yes, while online accounts for a lower percentage of new donors compared to the traditional direct mail channel, we know that when a donor goes online to research Operation Smile, they need to be able to find the same emotional messaging that caused them to pick up the envelope and open it in the first place. So when they arrive at a donation landing page, the creative also reflects our direct mail package. And you'll see here that we have video embedded in the page, and that provides additional supporting content for a prospective donor and to improve conversion. But I think that really important is consistency, and Jeff Brooks mentioned this in his recent column, are your online and offline efforts in sync? So while I would love for every prospect to type in the landing page web address, that's backslash URL, we know that many of them are simply going online and searching for Operation Smile. So when a prospective donor goes to our website during a direct mail acquisition campaign, they're going to see consistent images and emotional messaging. The website is really a conversion tool. We rotate this banner so that it matches our package, and we rotate it to the primary position on our homepage during our direct mail campaign. We also leverage acquisition creative for our online display advertising and our banner ads. And we cookie, I'm putting those in quotes, we cookie prospects who come to our website but don't convert, so we can continue to remarket and provide supporting messages during their online activity. And as I mentioned, all of our sources have unique donation landing pages so that we can track and report on results. This does mean that we have hundreds of unique landing pages, but it also means accurate reporting and attribution of the revenue. So this is the landing page for the homepage banner. After our acquisition campaign, because we know donors aren't going to always behave logically, we do a matchback of new donors acquired online to the direct mail list to clearly see who received a mail piece and who went online to make a donation. And then we credit that additional online lift back to our direct mail campaign. All right. So moving from traditional, this is really a case study talking about moving from traditional offline to multi-channel. So for full integration, it has to take place across acquisition and cultivation channels. So this is our multi-channel holiday giving catalog campaign, and it really demonstrates how we've taken a traditional direct mail product, a catalog, and have communicated to new and existing donors about this unique giving opportunity through a variety of channels. So for us, the concept was, could Operation Smile, certainly known for our surgery ask, could we create a holiday giving catalog filled with offers and products that would inspire donors to give symbolic, life-changing gifts in the names of family and loved ones, especially during an economic downturn? Well, we decided to plunge ahead and test, and we created the first holiday mini catalog in 2008, and that's the creative on the left that you see, and that was only in print. And then we followed that by launching full-size catalogs along with an e-commerce website and digital campaigns in the following years, and we continue to expand our channels. So our integrated campaign includes the print catalog, and that creatively positions an array of giving opportunities that is going to drive both low-end and high-end donors to respond online or through the mail or by phone. And then an interesting thing that we added, and that's in 2011, to address the needs of our major gift team, a high-value product was added at the $15,000 level to our catalog. We have an online catalog that's going to employ the best e-commerce strategies, and we use a series of emails to targeted audience segments during the holiday shopping season. And we have leveraged our new media opportunities that Brett was talking about, our social media opportunities, including within the digital space, search and banner ads, but we've also used Facebook to post messages about the catalog, and that's really because, as Brett said, it's an effective social media is really effective about conversations, so we leveraged it for those conversations. But what we also did is last year we actually added a catalog component to our Facebook site, and of course we're using videos to demonstrate the impact of our gifts. So you may have noticed I put two dates under the catalog cover on a prior slide. So let me just quickly explain that. As a donor engagement opportunity in the summer of 2010, we did a cover test. We actually created four different covers, and we sent an email asking our donors to vote for the favorite. And Laura, who appears on the left-hand side there, she was number one. And she's right there on the cover holding her before photo. Well, last summer, we did another test. And guess what? Laura won again. So the comments on the survey indicated that our donors really just connected with her, and the reflection of her amazing transformation they felt was really reflected in her eyes. So Cam Lee, who is on the right, on the back of the catalog, was number two, so we utilized her on the back cover. So this year, as we want to refresh our creative, we didn't offer Laura as an option for our 2012 catalog, but you need to check back with us to see who our cover child will be in 2012. Our catalog drops into the mail in mid-November, just in time for the holiday gift-giving season. So, to promote our number one product, which is to help provide a cleft lip surgery for $240, we include emotional stories, compelling before and after photos, and call-outs, which I've highlighted here with an arrow, to watch online videos, all to demonstrate the impact of our exceptional product. In 2011, we tested the addition of QR codes, linking donors from our print catalog to our rich media online. Well, here's an interesting lesson learned. A total of 14 people used the codes. So while they're really cool tools, our offline audience isn't necessarily an early adopter of the QR scan technology. When we talk about creative consistency, this means that our offline and our online efforts must look consistent, and the donor does not become confused when they receive an offline piece like the catalog and then goes online to make a donation or purchase. So our online e-commerce catalog was developed using the products and the visuals from our print catalog, as well as our videos. With the purchase of a symbolic gift, the donor receives a gift card to present to the honoree. And to meet the needs of all our donors, we offer both an online and an offline version. So we offer an email version or a PDF that they can print and fold, or they can choose to receive a hard copy card like this one here, printed with a message, and it's actually sent to the donor who can then present it to their loved one. We've utilized the traditional catalog, concept of incentives as a premium to increase average donations and provide donors with a tangible gift to present along with their gift card. All fulfillment is done by our gift processing vendor, and the premium goes out along with the acknowledgement and the gift card all at the same time. So that makes for a really great experience by the donor. Our online marketing includes a series of emails sent during the holiday shopping period. In 2011, we reduced the number of emails that we sent as we were worried about the high level of opt-outs that were occurring the prior year during the end-of-the-year campaigns. So this email was sent out prior to the mailing to alert donors to watch their mailbox, and as you can see, it presents the cover of the catalog so they can recognize the piece when it arrives in their home. But we also have a variety of other types of emails that we send out, and many of our catalog emails adopt a retail marketing style to the messaging, which is different from the more traditional campaigns and appeals. So this email was clearly a reminder to shop now. And this appeal focused on another type of audience segment. We featured the back-end premiums and a reminder about the last day to order and still receive that free gift before the holiday. I mentioned that in 2010, we utilized social media to publicize our online gift catalog, but in 2011, we went further. We expanded on Facebook, and you can find the catalog under the Donate Now link on our Facebook timeline. Facebook retains much of the basic e-commerce functionality, but has enhancements for social media. I especially like the ability to create a wish list of symbolic gift items, and then you get to post that and share it with your friends. Your friends can then donate the value of those items on your list to Operation Smile from the catalog application. So as Brett said, this is really conversation and inclusion. It's really about telling the stories, sharing why others should give, and certainly giving them the opportunity. It's simply unique that we have the ability to have them actually shop through Facebook. We could certainly also do this by pointing them online to our online catalog. So what does all that really mean? Through our holiday gift catalog integrated campaigns, we've seen a 250% increase in revenue and a 22% increase in average gift. which is a significant improvement in our conversion rate online. And in fact, in 2011, over 60% of all orders were placed online. And while our refinements reduced our costs, and that included a reduction in the number of emails we sent. So let me just reinforce that. Last year, we said we would reduce the number of emails. Unfortunately, we saw a corresponding drop in the revenue from our email channel in 2011. So while we were trying to enhance the donor's experience through less email, the lesson learned is less email equals less money. So while the catalog demonstrates a high level of integration of online and offline, you may not have a similar catalog product, and I can appreciate that. So how does integration apply to you? Well, in this small mini case study, I want to share how integration includes our major gift team and the benefit of using online to drive urgency and a deadline better than direct mail alone. So this is an appeal package we use across all giving levels within our organization, from our general direct response donors to our high-value major gift donors. And the messaging shares the successes of the calendar year and sets up the need for support for the programs planned for the following calendar year. It arrives in-home mid-December, and it's an extension of our holiday matching gift challenge. And so the deadline is continued through December 31st through this appeal. This email that ties to that appeal is sent was sent last year on December 28th. It highlights the messaging from the direct mail package and links to our online annual impact report. Now, the offer is consistent with the mail. It's an extension of the matching gift challenge by only a few more days, which adds urgency. And you can see that the landing page features the same creative, and the ask stream highlights the value of the matching gift. So again, consistency. Now, this email was sent on the 30th of December, just 2 days later, and we excluded all donors who had given to the December 28th email. We tested a new visual format here, and really we were highlighting the need image versus the success story images of the prior email. And this email focuses on the deadline. This is something that online does so much better than the mail, that true sense of urgency, give now. And for this integrated end-of-year campaign, average gift offline was $328, with an average gift online of $417. So just as Brett said, higher gifts online. So just one more sample here to share with you. I think one of the most important messages I want to share is how important it is to work together as a fundraising team and all come to the table to plan your campaigns and appeals. It doesn't really matter what channel. You need to be working all together to come up with the best strategy for implementation. And this appeal is an example of where less is actually more. So this past spring, we utilized powerful images from the field in a direct mail appeal and utilized those images online as well. And the offer is to stock an operating room. And for Operation Smile, that means bringing in the medical supplies and equipment along with the volunteer medical professionals to deliver safe surgery and the highest standards of care. The images are amazing, and during our planning sessions, there was plenty of discussion about interactive ways that we could use the resource online. Could we add boxes or supplies or equipment to fill that operating room when a donor made an online donation? I'm sure you can imagine those incredible ideas we tossed around. But you know, sometimes you have to keep it simple. It's all about the offer. It's about fundraising. And as a team, we agreed the best approach were the haunting images of the empty operating rooms. So that's what we focused on. Our integrated email appeal, we repeated the images of the empty space and drove home the sense of urgency with a deadline. This appeal significantly outperformed appeals falling in the same time frame the prior 2 years. It had an average gift of almost $80 from brand new donors who had received this as their first cultivation direct mail appeal. Online average gifts were just over $120. So simple truth here, integrated campaigns can create discomfort around reporting in traditional ways. So we know the sum is greater than the parts, and I think that if you consider the last click or the return envelope from the last campaign a measure of your effectiveness, I really have to say that's probably not the right thinking. So some of the ways that Operation Smile has addressed this is our direct mail reporting includes metrics and online revenue, such as the specific landing pages, the associated email results and landing page revenue, and those homepage banner click-through rates and revenue from the landing pages. All go back to that direct mail campaign. Why is it important? Why is integration important? The reporting important because you don't want to sabotage your overall fundraising efforts by canceling what appears to be underperforming or non-performing channels. You really have to look at integrated efforts as a whole and dig into the attribution. What you find may surprise you, so please be creative, measure each channel on its own, and use bottom line measurement to quantify success. Plus, you have to tolerate results that may not be directly attributable. They may simply be anecdotal. An example is maybe calling outbound calling to donors who send in white mail donations to headquarters and asking them what inspired you to give and tracking that back to the source. So as I wrap up here, just some key takeaways. When I talk about integration, I think this means more than multi-channel marketing. To serve the donor, your teams have to be functionally integrated. And that means at the very least bringing everyone to the table when planning your integrated fundraising calendar and the specific campaigns and appeals. And let me reinforce creative consistency. What is in the mail should be on your homepage and in your online appeals and on your donation page. And even more important is the same with the offer. Be consistent, because even script your outbound telefundraising to match the offer in the mail because you do not want to confuse your donor. And think of your website as a conversion mechanism. It makes it easy for the donor to give. That's walking in your donor's shoes and putting the donor first. So thank you very much. And I'm handing back, am I handing back to you, Margaret?
Oh, yes, actually, I'm going to jump in for a second.
Okay.
We have a ton of questions.
Oh, wow.
So I think, and we still have another presentation, so I think what we're going to do is probably not get to the questions, and what we would like to do is we'll gather all of the questions at the end, and we will give the questions to our presenters who will answer them for us, and we can arrange to have the questions and the answers sent in email form to all of our attendees, and we'll also make a feature out of them for our Today in Fundraising e-newsletter. So this way everybody gets the information, and we don't have to rush through the end of the presentation. So I hope that's okay with everybody. So please keep the questions coming. You will get them answered, just probably not today because we are running out of time and we have so many questions. So, Angie, why don't you take over from here?
Yep, absolutely. Just want to make sure I was off mute there for a second. So I get the pleasure here of coming after all these great examples that Jan just gave and all the great data that that Brett was going through with us. And basically what I want to talk about in the last minutes that we have here is, so we've seen some great examples. We've got enough data now. If you look at what Brett talked about and a little bit of the driving force concept and you look at some of the results or findings that Jan has to say, okay, we've got to find a way as an industry to integrate better across these channels. And as Jan pointed out, integration is much more than just channel integration. But, you know, for the purposes of this website webinar, we're actually just, you know, even focused on online and offline right now. But in reality, I think a lot of people say, how do we do this? And that's why I put this graphic up here with a bunch of signs going in different directions with nothing written on them, because it can very quickly become confusing, overwhelming, you know, where do we start, et cetera. So what I'm going to do is sort of back us into a little bit of a view of just starting the conversation. So, again, you know, I think, you know, you can have a situation easily with a large organization where they start talking about things being enterprise-wide. But for the majority of us in the industry, and go back to that just under 1.1 million 501c3s, you know, we just need to get the conversation started. And so what I've done is sort of put up in front of you four areas of of focus that you really need to try to actually think through as you start this conversation or you start moving towards integration. Now, obviously, you've heard a lot about channel integration today, and that's probably the easiest place to start. Jan is a great spokesperson, both from not only strategy and fundraising, but from the operational side. Because clearly, as you heard her talk about and you saw her presentation, you know, you saw things like discomfort. And obviously, you know, when you start trying to do things that will be, you know, back and forth across channels, back and forth across departments, it's going to feel uncomfortable because it's different than the way the majority of us have done work in fundraising and marketing for the, you know, last 20, 25, 30 years, depending on how long you've been around. So the four areas that you've got to force yourself to think about, channel, I bet you don't have to force yourself to think about it. You've got to think about the operations around how do you even if you're just talking about direct mail and online, like we started this webinar talking about, you've got to think operationally about how this has got to work on the front end and the back end for your donors and even your non-donors. You really have to talk about segmentation. I'm going to give you some thoughts on that. And then, of course, Jan has talked a lot about the metrics and performance category, so we're going to talk about that as well. So if we go to the next slide, I just sort of want to, let me click one more time here. So on the channel side, and I'm betting all of you can fill this box in yourself if you were writing it, which is, you know, if you're going to look at integrating, you know, whether it's within your team or across multiple teams, if online happens to be handled under a different department or a different team than maybe the direct mail is in some cases, you're going to have to look at timing of your touches. You're clearly going to have to look at messages and how they're working across the various channel, and then you're going to have to look at your audiences. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit more about audiences down in the segmentation section. But let me just, you know, Jan gave us a great example. So the first case study she put up was around her acquisition program. So you saw how they had managed to not just do it in direct mail, and have an online component, but they went as far as their digital side of putting it, having landing pages that represented that creative, having the homepage banner reflect that creative and that messaging, so that as their constituents moved throughout the different ways to experience their brand, they actually could feel a little bit like home. They could see something that they either was relevant to them or that they had heard previously. So again, it's not just about, hey, we need to add an email. We need to add an email component to our direct mail. It goes much further than that. I'm sure a lot of you realize that already, so I don't want to harp on that. I think channel integration is the easiest conversation to start in your organization. It just gets a little more detailed as you go around this half cycle here. So from an operations perspective, bring that one up. From an operations perspective, you get into some really, and you want to talk about some discomfort, to again use Jan's word, you're going to talk about some crazy stuff here. So all of a sudden, you know, one of the things, you know, you heard Jan say, and I'm sorry I'm stealing so much of her lines, it's the benefit of going last. You know, she made a comment and she said, hey, look, make sure you don't abandon some channels that look on the surface as being non-performing or not performing up to your certain level. So all of a sudden, to be able to start to talk about things like that, you're not just looking at reports. You're talking about how much am I spending on direct mail and how much am I spending on email. And by the way, what if one is helping the other out? Shouldn't I be looking at that spend together and measuring that performance together? Because when you start to tease it out, it's easy from a line item perspective on a budget to say, let's do away with that campaign. It's not raising a lot of money. But what if that campaign was actually leading you into better messaging into the next campaign, or whether it was being helped by another channel, and by removing one, you're going to actually remove that sort of second step for that donor. So budgeting has to come on the table. I'm not ever going to say that an organization restructures their finances, restructures their departments. But the three things that you have to start to look at differently are, even if it's in sort of the virtual world within the organization, is shouldn't we be looking at our budgeting even if it's a secondary way, so the CFO is never going to get on board with this, but as marketers and fundraisers, we can easily get on board with it and keep a separate Excel spreadsheet. Let's look at our finance and how we're funding the channels to figure out where we make the greatest inroads or make the greatest results. The data has to get integrated. This is also going to lead into the segmentation discussion. You know, for example, you know, you saw examples across Jan's case studies of Facebook interaction, offline interaction, online interaction. That online interaction could have been through an email. It could have been through somebody clicking on the banner. Well, guess what? Are you capturing all that, and are you starting to attach that to your user IDs or your constituent IDs? So you've got to be able to say, hey, if Angie Moore is an Operation Smile donor, you know, that's not good enough anymore. We need to know Angie Moore is an Operation Smile donor, and the majority of the time throughout her 2011 engagement year, she was online, but she also gave the majority of her money offline, but she engaged the most online. So you start to talk about data. Now, I'm not saying boil the ocean and capture everything, but as fundraisers and marketers, we've got to capture at least the financial engagement to start with. And I'm sure Brett will be the first to tell you, hey, but it's a lot bigger than just capturing the money, and I would agree 100%. But again, we're talking about starting the conversation. As a side note, I would say the biggest problem organizations have right now is they say things like, we want to be donor-centric, we want to be constituent-centric, we want to become an integrated marketing organization or an integrated fundraising organization. But when they make this giant to-do list of all the things that have to change, they sort of say, wow, we don't have time for that, we don't have bandwidth, how do we do all this? It's just taking the small bites at a time. So talk about the most important data that would help you make the best marketing and fundraising decisions as you go. Speaking of decisions, all of a sudden, the minute you start to combine two channels, and in many organizations, the person who is pushing the buttons for email is different than the person who's actually talking to the production facilities and pushing out the direct mail. So the minute you have two different decision makers involved, you don't just have two different channels. You have a situation where these people need to come together and say, okay, so if we're going to make a decision not to have our communication be decentralized, how do we make decisions together? Gosh, what if my email is supposed to hit on the same day as your direct mail, and we know there's a 40% overlap in the people that are getting it? So who's going to slide their date? Who's going to even make the decision of whether the date needs to be slid? So those are the things what I mean by operations and decision making. It's the ability to come together around a table and talk about what happens if there's conflict between two marketing strategies that happen to be across channels. Could be two marketing strategies that are in the same channel, by the way. But in this case, you know, just simply talking about an email going and hitting the same time that a direct mail piece is going to hit. Is that good, bad? How do we talk about it? What would be optimal, et cetera? Having that integrated conversation. So for segmentation, this is the one that gets it's the most complicated. And if I could, I would always talk about it last when I talk about starting the conversation, because at some point when you get a team together that says, hey, we need to find a way to integrate our email and our direct mail, and I think those conversations have happened for around the country for many years. I think the real issue is that you've got to be able to say, okay, well, if I come to the table representing direct mail, I'm probably going to talk about my premium donors maybe, or my first-year donors, or my second-year direct mail donors, or whatever my own labeling is in my organization. Well, the email people are probably going to come to the table, and they're going to talk about the people that are clickers, the people that are opening, the people that are following through and clicking through to the website, and at the high level, they're going to talk about, well, these are my email donors. So you've got to find a common language that gets you over and above just the transaction and just the channel. This is probably one of the hardest things to do, but the great thing about it is with some data and the ability, even if you don't have a database, find a way to work where you could at least pull something together offline. Again, I'm not talking about an enterprise-wide database here. Find a way to get all your direct mail donors and all your email donors together so you can at least understand what is the overlap. And then look at that overlap. Are they the majority of direct mail donors that are moving, as Brett might have said, that, you know, you might have a follow-up campaign, they'll give more money through online, but they start in direct mail, or the reverse of that? So the idea would be to understand the people that are moving across your channels in a way that you can talk about them that's not centric to your program. Because the minute somebody says direct mail donors, then an e-marketing person doesn't really know how to talk about them in relation to their e-marketing plan and their e-strategy. So the biggest things around it is find the language that works for you guys. Sometimes it's demographic language. Sometimes it's attitudinal language. Sometimes it's just simply getting out of the transactional space, and it's got to be a language that's understood across the channels. Last but not least, and by the way, if you're struggling with that, you know, join the crowd. Segmentation is one of the hardest things, but don't let it stop you guys from trying to integrate and get someplace different. So last but not least on metrics and performance, again, and I almost just need to refer back to Jan's entire presentation. You know, she said things like, gosh, yes, we now have landing pages that are specific to our creative, and we have rotating banners that reflect the messaging of our campaigns that are in market at the same time. And, wow, that means we have hundreds of landing pages. So all of a sudden, when you start talking about hundreds of landing pages, and even Brett gave us some data around the integration of performance. Somebody gets this in the mail, but then they usually go to an online place to actually give the donation. So all of a sudden, your metrics and performance can't be channel-centric either. So the minute you start saying, hey, let's find a way to do our online stuff and our direct mail stuff, at least to the shared audiences, at least to the people you think are in both places at the same time, you've got to say, well, I've got to have metrics that are channel-specific or that are channel-specific to reflect my program, but then cross-channel to talk about us working together. So they've got to be looking across the channel. And then I would say the two next levels of metrics and performance that you'll quickly find yourself in is, remember the common language around segmentation, trying to get out of just a direct mail donor or just an email donor. Guess what? So you're going to have metrics and performance that look at constituents, not at programs. So you're going to want to measure your channels. You're always going to want to say, spend this much, get this much. You're going to want to measure it across the channels. But then you actually want to measure the people and how those people are engaging. Brett said something in his comments, and he said, look, social media has sort of struggled a little bit with being able to produce hardcore fundraising numbers, but it's a great way, and Brett, I'll probably botch your comment. I think you said it's a great way to reinforce the brand. So, again, these constituents are experiencing your brand, your organization, in multiple ways. So you need to measure the constituents as well. And then, of course, last but not least, when you reach that point, you want to look at across programs. So you might have fundraising, but what if they're also engaging on that same website that has that banner that Jan talked about? They're also engaging around something else, whether it's an advocacy issue, et cetera. So, again, I think what you want is you want to be able to start the conversation. These are four conversation starters. They're not always the easiest, and probably the thing that makes them the most difficult is the piece I just put in, which is your organization's culture. But I'm here to tell you, after doing this for the last 10 years, working with organizations around integration and CRM and bringing new pieces of the puzzle in, everybody says this is going to be a problem for my culture. And you know what? You're right. So let's move on. Okay, it is hard because nobody's done it this way, and they're potholes to fall into, and that's why we've got people like Jan to help us through that and understand the potholes they've already fallen into. But the culture is what it is because it's the way we've all done business for the last, you know, many years, however many you wanna say. So the next question we get, and I've got like 30 seconds left, is that everybody wants to say, "Gosh, this seems so hard. We're still making numbers. We got a 2% increase last year. Isn't that good enough?" So everybody wants to know, is the juice worth the squeeze? So I'm just going to wrap up here and say, you tell me. We have data across not only my company, Brett's shown you data, Jan has shown you real live results of her test. Greater relevancy, meaning getting that message consistent and across multiple channel, absolutely hands down has proven out across the industry, you create stronger relationships. A better brand experience, drives better retention and higher commitment, which is an absolute factor of, are you relevant to them? Do they have a strong relationship? Are they having a great experience across the various channels? Higher commitment equals more money, and all of that ties into greater mission impact. So I would say the juice is worth the squeeze. Doesn't mean the squeeze is going to be easy, but it definitely is the right direction for us. So I think I'm right at my time here.
And you're losing your voice.
I didn't mean to do that. I program my voice box to shut off when I'm supposed to stop talking.
Clever. Okay, well, we are really close to being out of time. And like I said, we'll form these answers and we'll put them together in a feature for the Today in Fundraising newsletter. If you don't subscribe to it, you can go to fundraisingsuccessmag.com and you can subscribe to it. And we will also try to get some of the answers out via email to our attendees. So we're just about out of time. I'm sorry, go ahead, Brett.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, you can also, we will try to do some answering as well at CDS Global MP, which is our nonprofit blog site, CDS Global MP. I'll probably take some of these because there's some really good questions here that have a lot to do with some of the things we do as a company, too. So you can look there, too.
Okay. On behalf of Fundraising Success and CDS Global, I'd like to thank everyone for attending today's webinar. Please be sure to check out our webinar page at fundraisingsuccessmag.com to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. And if you would just please take a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen, we would be very grateful. Your feedback will influence the webinars we bring you in the future. Thanks again. Hope you enjoyed yourself. Have a good day. Bye.